graphs into one of the states, an axiomatic approach. The outline, I'm going to talk briefly about the introduction, motivation, notations, and approaches. Then, how to map graphs into quantum states from some well-defined axioms. I'll give examples of such states, of quantum states, which do fit into this axiomatic framework. Then I'll conclude. So the main question I'm going to address in this talk is, given a graph G, which is defined by vertices V and a set of vertices and a set of edges E, how do we map it to a quantum state ket G of a quantum system? Well, the motivation of this, first, we want to go beyond graph states because there are many interesting states like the Wn states, the DK, DNK states, which are not graph states. And the idea was, can we define new families of entangled states based on these graphs? Now, I don't know how many of you are familiar with graph states. Probably not. Okay, so I'll spend a bit of time on the blackboard. Anyone is familiar with qubits? Okay, so back to the basics. So a qubit is a state in a two-dimensional Hilbert space H. So it's the simplest non-trivial Hilbert space you can imagine. So basically any state of such Hilbert space can be written in general as alpha 0 plus beta 1. It is normed, so psi is mod alpha. So alpha and beta are complex numbers. So we need to have a norm set obviously to conserve probabilities. And obviously, we don't distinguish between psi and a phase, e to the I alpha psi, because the phase is a general phase, it's unobservable. So basically, we have one constraint and one extra factor. From four real parameters, we are left with two real parameters. So far, so good. Any questions? It's very simple. Imagine the qubit as a spin 1/2. So basically, you can represent it on a box sphere. The surface of the box sphere is 2 parameters. So basically, you can reparameterize the state alpha and beta as cos theta 0 plus e to the I phi sine theta 1. So we have the two real parameters, theta and phi, which can be pictured on the block sphere. The poles, these correspond to the 0 state and to the 1 state. So basically you have one spin half. So you can take this as spin up, this can be taken as spin down, depending on your representation. But of course, any other state, because this is a linear vector space, you can define any other basis you want. For example, you can write it in terms of the eigenvalues and eigenvectors, eigenvectors of the x axis. So you can have the same state can be written in terms of other parameters. That's alpha prime, the state plus beta prime, the state minus, where plus and minus are linear combinations of the previous two states. 1 square root of 2, 0 plus 1, and 0 minus 1. Of course, the basis is orthonormal. 0, 1 is 0, and plus minus is 0. So I'm just moving from, in the same Hilbert space, I'm moving from one basis, 0 and 1, to another basis, plus and minus. So I can find any other basis I want. So basically, my Hilbert space H is just the span of 0 and 1, or the span of plus and minus, and so on. So this is the qubit. A state in a two-dimensional Hilbert space. The simplest example you can find, or spin 1/2. Okay, so in quantum information, we want to work with qubits because these are the the basic units of information, and we want to find interesting states, like EPR states, so the best states. If you have more than one qubit, then your state would belong to, let's call this H1 for one qubit, to the tensor product of such n qubits. So it would be H1 tensor itself n times. And basically, you can just picture this as a tensor product of such states like spin-up, tensor, spin-up, n times. And I'll call this up-up. So this is an example. This is actually a vector in a basis vector in my bigger Hilbert space. Now, the problem you can obviously see, classically, if I have n particles, and each particle is defined by 2 or 3 or, let's say, 6 degrees of freedom. So in a classical case, I have 3 positions and 3 momenta. This is all I need to know to define the phase space. So classically, for n particles, I have 6n degrees of freedom. So I have to keep track of these degrees of freedom in order to describe the evolution, the time evolution of my system. Why? Because the phase space is just the Cartesian product of individual phase spaces for all the classical particles I want to describe. And of course, Cartesian product is the dimension of the big phase space is just a sum of the dimensions of individual phase spaces. Well, quantumly, the things change dramatically, and if I have n quantum particles, and each one is described by a two-dimensional, which is the simplest, the basic one, I have 2 to the n. Why? Because in this case, the full Hilbert space is a tensor product. So the difference is Cartesian product versus tensor product. And obviously, just simple mathematics, this is just the product of individual dimension. That's why I have 2 to the n. Now, this presents a problem, and basically, it was one of the thoughts Feynman had at the beginning, actually, well, the prehistory of quantum computing. He said, okay, we know that it's very difficult to simulate a quantum system on a classical computer. I have my computer, I want to simulate, let's say, a lattice of spins, and the phase, the Hilbert space just goes up exponentially, because if I have n spins, I just need 2 to the n parameters to track down. Obviously, so basically the more general state in such a Hilbert space would be just the sum ai1, ain, and the product of all basis states i1, in. So dimension is 2 to the n, I need 2 to the n parameters. And it's very difficult, it's very inefficient.
So let me ask, so the sphere is a geometrical object.
Yeah.
It has maps.
Yeah.
Here you have linear algebra.
Yeah. It's just linear, you know,
okay. It's linear algebra, it's not geometry.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the problem Feynman put was that it's very inefficient to simulate a quantum system on a classical computer. Why? Because the difference in how classical versus a quantum system behave when you have n particles. And his question, basically, was, is it possible then to have a kind of universal quantum simulator in which I can simulate one quantum system, a known quantum system, on a different quantum system, which basically I know how to control. So that was the kind of the original idea. But it was left unanswered for many years until the whole quantum computing business started. This is related to what I was talking before, because what we want, exactly from this fact of inefficiency of simulating quantum states on a quantum board, even representing quantum states on a classical computer, what we would like is to find a subfamily, a subset of the full Hilbert space, a family of states which can be represented efficiently on a quantum computer. So I don't have to describe everything, but I have some families of states which can be good enough for me, and those are efficient because I can describe them in with less parameters. And basically, these are the graph states I was mentioning. So I had to do all this introduction in order to present why we're interested in this and why we want an efficient description of certain families of states. And basically, stabilized states, or n qubits, dimension is 2 to the n. And stabilized states are states which are stabilized by Pauli group operators. Notation zi is just sigma z acting on qubit I. So basically, it's a Pauli operator. We know the z operator is just 1, 0, 0, minus 1 in the standard representation. X is 0, 1, 1, 0. And y is 0, I, minus I, 0. Okay. And it acts on a specific qubit, so basically it's a tensor product of identity on everything else, tensor with sigma z on the ith position. So acts locally on my spins. Again, if you have the representation, imagine you have a chain of n spins. Spin half, so it can be spin up, spin down, and so on. Sigma z acts on locally on that. Okay, so basically a stabilized state is efficiently described by n such stabilizers. So once I have the stabilizers, I know how to efficiently describe that state. And this is efficient because I singled out these families of states, and basically I need only n parameters in order to describe a state which belongs to a huge 2 to the n dimensional Hilbert space. We know what these stabilizers. Yeah. Okay, so that's why stabilizer states and graph states are important, because there are a subclass of such states which can be efficiently described not by 2 to the n parameters as would be for any state, but only with n parameters, which are basically the n stabilizers of the state. So basically, what I have here, I have a set of n stabilizers, S1, Sn, where n is the number of qubits. So it's a very efficient way of describing just by n stabilizers. Now, graph states, so there are two parallel approaches, and they somehow both converge to one. Graph states are defined in a kind of pictorial intuitive way. You start with n qubits, which are your spins. And let's define a graph on this. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So first I can define my state psi. I have one qubit associated to each vertex. So I have 5 qubits. And depending on the graph, I apply a control sigma z operator to all the pairs of qubits linked by an edge. First, I'm putting all my qubits in the plus state. So the plus state, as we've seen before, is 1 square root of 2, 0 plus 1. So you can think it in terms of sigma x operators. And then I apply control ij for every ij belonging to the edges. So my graph g is defined by the set of vertices, the set of edges. So basically in this case, V is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the set of edges. So basically what this means is that for that example, I'm applying a control, I will not sure exactly what is this operator, like C1, 2, C2, 4, C3, 4, for every edge in a graph, C3, 4, C3, 5, and C1, 5, on the plus state. The Cij is called control Z operator. It's an operator acting on the Hilbert spaces of qubit I and J, and leaving everything else invariant. So in my big Hilbert space, I have H1 tensor product to H1, because it's the same Hilbert space, I have only qubits. And this operator acts on the Hilbert space I and the Hilbert space J. So basically it's just identity on anything else, tensor to, I'll define this matrix in a minute, and identity on anything else. The C matrix here is just 1, 1, 1, minus 1. So you can see it as being identity on the first 2 by 2 and a Z operator on the other. This is a control Z operator. It has a pictorial representation like this. And what it says is it puts a phase of minus 1 if and only if both qubits are in the state plus 1. Enough to give you the definition of how it acts on the basis. Once I know how it acts on the basis, I know how it acts on any vector. So 0, 0 goes to 0, 0, nothing. 0, 1 goes to 0, 1, nothing. 1, 0 goes to 1, 0. But 1, 1, it has a pi phase. So p to the I pi is minus 1. It's minus 1, 1. Now this operator looks quite simple, but it's absolutely essential, and basically if on a quantum system you know how to implement it and you know how to do single qubit gates, you're in the business and you have universal quantum computation. And this is very difficult, for example, to implement in standard systems. So given a graph, I put a qubit in each vertex, I start with, I put the qubits in a superposition of plus tensor n, and if you do a very simple calculation, what is this state plus tensor n? So I take a Hilbert space to the n dimensional, and I write equal superposition of all the basis states. Any questions?
These are choices for the time being. You choose something. If you take only products of these operators, you just pick up some states and do some selected operations. You lose a lot of you lose the rest of the information about your Hilbert space, right?
No, I'm talking about families of states which can be described efficiently.
Okay, but that's a very restricted set.
Yeah.
Okay.
But for example, these operators are universal in the sense that any state in a Hilbert space, absolutely any state in the Hilbert space, can be constructed only by applying single qubit operations, so basically individual SU2 operation on any qubit. So if I represent, this is the standard representation in terms of quantum networks. So these are my qubits, I1 to IN, and I can start from any state, like 0, 0, 0, 0. I can construct any state in that Hilbert space if I apply single qubit operations, so something which acts locally on one qubit, and then two qubit operation like sigma z or sigma naught.
Yes.
That's enough.
Yes, of course, but you also need some superpositions and with arbitrary coefficients. And that's the way you generate the Hilbert space.
I'm generating this Hilbert space only by applying local transformations and control z operations. Okay, so this is the unitary group. So these are 2 by 2 complex matrices belonging to the unitary group. So for any U in U2, there are 4 parameters, phi, alpha, beta, gamma, such that I can write them as I to the I alpha z, I to the I beta x, I to the I gamma z.
But so that's what I'm saying, you are putting parameters in.
Yes.
But of course, if you put parameters and you start superposing.
So what I'm saying is any n-qubit state can be written as a product of a U transformation here, which is general in this sense, so it's a U2.
Okay, but you have parameters there. You have
parameters
which you have to depend on your state, then of course.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, this is a separate thing, how you write universality. So what I was trying to say is that you can write any state in n-dimensional Hilbert space as gates or transformation acting on single qubits, so U2 transformation or SC2 if you can, because SC2 is just basically you drop this phase. And this matrix, which is a control Z, so control Z is an extremely powerful operator because once you have any U, if you can apply any U in U2 group, which have these 3 or 4 parameters, And then this fixed matrix, which is just 1, 1, 1, 1, minus 1, you can construct any state. This operator gives you universality once you know how to do all the single qubit operations. So this is exact universality, you can have approximate universality, and then you need only Hadamard, which is a fixed matrix. Then you can approximate and you can rotate, and you go as close as possible to the matrix you want. It's like approximating a real number by a rational.
So you say, to put it in rotation terms, you have this like the Euler angles, say.
Well, these are exactly the Euler angles.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And then you construct your state, and then you apply reflections or something on it. You have a set of special operators.
Yeah, so your operators are basically the things you can do in the lab. I know how to apply the magnetic field, so I apply pulses of gigahertz radiation. So it's the way I manipulate my system, depending on the system I have. If my qubits are the ground state and the first excited state, I apply pulses with that frequency or the tunes with some phases and so on. If my system are polarization qubits, I have quarter wave plates, which are rotatable, half wave plates, and I transform. So depending on your system, the operations you apply in the lab is different. But mathematically, they're nothing but matrices and operators in the Hilbert space. That was a side remark about the universality. In this case, of course, I'm inside a subspace of that Hilbert space, the one which can be described efficiently just by applying these operators. And you can see that this is a stabilizer state, where each stabilizer operator is written like xi product of z j for every j in the neighborhood of I. So the stabilizers are directly connected to the graph. So once I know the graph, I can write the stabilizers, and I know the state. Okay, so that was a very, very, very long aside why we want to describe states, quantum states, efficiently. Because one, taking the full universe space, you need 2 to the n parameters, this is inefficient, so you want to focus on a subset of such states which are powerful enough, so they span a big portion of that Hilbert space, and also they are easy to write, so basically they're easy to represent. The second question was, can we solve some interesting graph problems using the quantum power by mapping graphs to some quantum states and doing something in the Hilbert space and using, let's say, the power tools of quantum computation? Can I solve some hard problems like subgraph isomorphies, thick polarability, or can we derive properties of the graph G by studying the associated ket G? Can we define new graph invariants? I'm not going to talk about this second problem. That was just a motivation for the work. And basically, the focus of the talk would be just the first one, going beyond the graph states. Okay, briefly, a graph is a set of vertices V and a set of edges. The order of the graph is defined as the number of vertices. And you can represent the graph very simply by an adjacency matrix, Aij, which for simple graphs, simple means without loops, not directed edges, I can represent that as a matrix, which is called the adjacency matrix, which has 0 on the diagonal because it doesn't have loops, meaning edges starting and ending in the same vertex. And I have a 1 whenever, so let's say if this is 1, 2, 3, 4, this would be a 4x4 matrix. So I have 1 and 2, so between 1 and 2 I have 1, 0, 1 and 3 I don't have anything, and 1 and 4 are connected, then this is symmetric, so Aij is Aji, so everything. Okay, so there are several approaches of how to pose this question. First, we need to find the Hilbert space, and then to find the G, to isolate that state in the Hilbert space. We can map V, which is the vertices, to qubits, and these are exactly the graph states I was talking about before, or we can map E to qubits. So in the Kitaev model, this is an abstract graph I put a qubit, so a spin on each edge, and I act with operators depending on the world. I can define the Lagrangian of the graph, which is the known difference between the degree delta of G, which is the degree of the vertex. The degree is the number of, basically, if I have a vertex, I can count how many edges it has, incidentally. That's the degree of the vertex. Minus the adjacency matrix, this can be proven to be a positive operator, and that will be a density matrix of the graph, and so on. You can put random walks on graphs, so you can imagine a graph, you can have particles like electrons or photons hopping between these two. So you can have like a Bose-Hubble model with particle in vertices and every edge, meaning there's an interaction between that and like tunneling between the two and so on. So you can study random walks on graphs and so on. Okay, just a simple counting. Clearly, for a simple graph, you have the number of edges. It's between 0 and n minus 1 over 2. That's the maximum number of edges you can have. And the graph, number of graphs with n vertices is bounded by 2 to the n and minus 1 over 2. Of course, not all these are distinct, because I can have permutations of that, and these are symmetries, and they represent basically the same graph. So this is just an upper bound. And the number of graphs with n vertices and n edges is bounded by this number here, n n minus 1 over 2 choose l. So here we need a Hilbert space which has a bigger dimension than n. So how do we go forward? So I was trying to think about this problem, and I said, okay, let's take a step back and see, approach the problem differently. And the question was, what properties we want for the map from the graph to the G. So let's find some intuitive, nice, easy properties, out of which, kind of in an axiomatic fashion, we can derive the consequences of that. So basically, the new approach I'm going to talk about is we start with the axioms and then you derive properties. And then how to choose the axioms. So I propose three axioms, and we'll see how from these you derive the whole structure. The first is, if you have two unconnected graphs, let's say, I can have this graph, G1, and then I have this graph, G2. What would be a natural, of course I can construct a graph which is the connected sum, which is that U plus the connected sum of that, the union of the two graphs. So what would be a natural way of assigning a state to this new graph? Well, thinking in terms of physical systems, I think it's very natural to say, okay, if these two are unconnected, so there are no edges between them, I can just say, okay, G of U1 tensor, connected sum with G2 is just the tensor product of G1 and G2. So I take that as a lecture. Let's see what we get out of this. Obviously, if you have the empty graph, so it's the graph which has n vertices but no edges, and the adjacency matrix would be 0 everywhere because there are no edges, that will correspond to just taking a tensor product from this axiom. So if I have n disconnected points with no edges, well, that's just psi 1 tensor product of psi n. With psi, some way of assigning an assignment of states to vertices. That's pretty straightforward. So basically, given a graph G, I can associate to each vertex I a Hilbert space HI, such that the total Hilbert space is just a tensor product of all the individual Hilbert spaces. So basically, this settles up the problem. We choose vertices, two qubits. It follows naturally from this axiom. If we choose this axiom, then it follows that we have vertices are mapped to qubits. Anyone from your qubits? Okay, so qubits are two-dimensional Hilbert spaces, qubits are d-dimensional. So basically, instead of spin 1/2, which is up or down, qubit is d-dimensional spin. So that's all. So basically, qubit is d-dimensional Hilbert space. Okay, let's see what other axioms. So basically, the first axiom already gave us some structure. What I want, if I have, I want somehow to factor in some natural properties of graphs, and the most natural property is the graph isomorphism. I have graphs which are isomorphic up to permuting the labeling of the vertices. So what I want in this case, if I have two isomorphic graphs like G1 and G2, examples of isomorphic graphs, this graph and this graph are isomorphic. If you write the matrices, the basis matrices, they're of course not the same, but if you produce two of the vertices, these graphs have the same mathematical properties, they're just isomorphic. So in this case, if I have isomorphic graphs, then I want that my density matrix rho, which would be just the ketch bra of just the usual definition of the density matrix operator, I want it to be after permutation the same as the other one. So P is a permutation, and we note that P is well defined because I know that I associate to each vertex a Hilbert space, and I know how to permute that Hilbert space just by an operator. So this is my second axiom. If two graphs are isomorphic, I want the density matrices of those graphs to be the same up to a permutation. Obviously, if P is an automorphism of a graph, then it commutes, and some of this naturally implements the idea of graph symmetry. So a symmetry is something which commutes with the state of the system. Okay, so from these two axioms, it follows that given a graph, I have a Hilbert space H, which is a tensor product of individual Hilbert spaces, H1 power, tensor power N, where the dimension of H1 is a free parameter, so I can choose whatever type of system associated with the vertex. So from the first axiom, I had the big Hilbert space is H1 times H2 times HN, but then now I know that H1 and H2 and HN are all the same Hilbert space, they have the same dimension. So far, so good. We know that this gives the first two axioms give a kind of a kinematic of the problem. How do you construct it in the end? So one intuitive way of saying, okay, suppose I have two graphs which have the same number of vertices. So I have G and G prime. G is defined by V and E, vertices and edges, and G prime is defined by V and E prime. So they have the same number of vertices, but they differ just by one single edge between I and G. So that's all it is. So what I want is that I can go from KG to KG prime just by one operator, Uij. And that's the strong axiom. I want that U does not depend on G and G prime. So it's a kind of universal edge operator. I'm imposing that U does not depend on the underlying graphs. It depends only on the I and J, on the vertices. Okay, so we need some consistency properties for U. So for example, first they have to have a local action on the Hilbert spaces. So if I and J are the qubits, these operator act only on I and J and nothing else. So basically the identity on the rest. Now because I have unoriented graphs, it shouldn't depend on the way I apply this operator. So basically it should commute with a swap. The swap is basically the operator which swaps the two.
If I understand well, there are many ways to embed graphs into quantum states, and this is a way to make the rules of embedding more
explicit.
To select probably some beautiful and useful embeddings from all possibilities, because.
No, I think the embeddings you select on a different criterion. I think this is just axiomatizing what you already have in your hand, right?
It's more general, so that's an example. That's kind of inspiration for this.
Yeah, but up to now I don't see anything new in this general.
That operator, it doesn't have to be Cij. And second, I want the edge commutativity. In the sense that it doesn't matter that I apply U to IJ first and then JK or the other way around. Because obviously when I'm constructing the graph, it doesn't matter that I start with this graph and apply first this one and then this one, or first this one and then this one. So it's an obvious or natural consequence of the way I'm constructing the graph by drawing edges. Okay, so to summarize, basically, the theory is characterized by a triplet, H1, which is the Hilbert space at each vertex, psi, which is an initial state in that Hilbert space, which is arbitrary, and the local H operator, which is a linear operator on H1 tensor H1. So it's an operator which acts only on a 2-qubit Hilbert space. And then I'm constructing my state G by starting with psi tensor product on N, which is my initial state. They all have to be the same because of the invariance of the empty graph. And then I just apply Uij for every edge ij. Now let's see a couple of examples which can fit into this formalism. So first are qubit graph states, in which I generalize H1 instead of graph states that are qubits. So I have qubits associated to those edges. My initial state, it's psi to the d, so it's a superposition, equal superposition of all the basis states. So instead of 0 plus 1, I state 0 plus 1 plus 2 plus d minus 1. I can have more than one edge. I can have up to d minus 1 edges. And my operator is control zd, which has this form. Phi is a phase, so basically this is different from that operator there, because it acts on a different space. These are well-known states, have been studied in the literature, and so on. Okay, another example are Gaussian states, or continuous variable cluster states. You can associate to the vertex Q-mode, what's called a Q-mode, or a harmonic oscillator. This has an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. The Hilbert space is the span of infinitely squeezed momentum states. You can start as the initial state either with zero P, which is a continuous variable cluster state, or with a beta, which is a coherent state. And in this case, I have a control IJ operator, which is E to the I, this kind of displacement, QI and QJ. This has been studied by many Cucci and others. So far, we had a kind of monolithic Hilbert space associated to each vertex. There's no structure. But if I have regular graphs, let's say each vertex has a regular graph is defined by graphs in which each vertex has order g. So what I can do, I can add more structure to the vertex. I can start with my initial Hilbert space for the vertex as cd to some power g, and then put structure on that. Another example are the projected and entangled pair states. These are states well known in the literature, and there are many, many tens or hundreds of articles written about their properties. They are good because, again, they can be represented efficiently, and they're also ground states of local Hamiltonian, and we can work with them efficiently. In this case, you have four QDs inside each vertex, and then you construct a maximally entangled state between this vertex and this vertex, and then you apply a projector operator on the states on the Hilbert space at the vertex. So basically, you can formalize this saying that your initial state is plus d tensor g. So for every state, g is the degree of the vertex, and in this case, it's 4. You construct the maximally entangled state between these two, and then you project that state to this v. And this is how you construct the projected entangled pair states. You apply first a unitary V and then a projector. Another example, what is called quantum random networks. These have been introduced by the Chirac group in a later physics paper. Similar to the case before, you take qubits at each vertex. In this case, the order of the graph is n minus 1, so you connect everything to everything. But then you project with this operator, with this projector operator. But what is the meaning behind this? They started with the idea of from classical random graph. So in the classical random graph case, what you have n vertices, and then you flip a coin with some probability. So it's a biased coin. Probability p, you add a vertex between h, I, and j, and probability 1 minus p, you don't add. And they wanted to do something similar. So basically, they said, okay, can we generalize the random, like Erdős, Schrenyi, and these are, this is a big field of random graphs, in classical random graphs. And they were saying, can we generalize this to quantum random graphs? So let's think of each vertex as having, let's say, a local quantum system. They share a pair of entangled qubits between neighboring graphs, but the state is not maximally entangled, so it has some entanglement, and they try by local operations to convert that either into a maximally entangled pair or into disconnected qubits. They do some local operations, and sometimes with probability P they can convert that to a maximally entangled pair, and other times, for example in this case and in this case, they just get a disconnected state. Again, this can fit into this framework, so it's more than it meets the eye. So basically from these rules you can generalize these states to other states. Okay, some solutions briefly, you don't have much time. So for D equal to a particular solution, it looks like a diagonal A, B, B, C. So instead of 1, 1, 1, minus 1, you have A, B, B, and C parameters. Control Z, which is that matrix, corresponds to this choice. You can have a projector, and for example, it's diagonal 1, 0, 0, 1. That's the projector that gives you the parity gate. Or you can have something more general like this. Okay, what's nice about this axiomatic approach is that you think in terms of some rules, and you can plug and play. Okay, I want to modify, let's say, axiom number 2. Let's see what consequences I can get. Can I get more states? So one way of generalizing is to have directed graphs, and in this case you have an oriented edge operator. So V pointing up is different from V pointing down, so the symmetry is broken. I can write a set of formal rules what these operators should obey, and that will be something like this. So they should commute. Again, because it doesn't matter if I'm applying this edge first or that edge first. Then they should commute on any application on different qubits. You can see that any solution for a directed graph provides a solution for undirected graph just by taking the product of those two. The axiomatic way provides a unifying framework for several states like graph, Gaussian, continuous variable, PEPs, quantum random networks. It's a modular approach, so you can replace one axiom with stronger or weaker ones, and you can see what consequences and what you get out of that. You have different classes of states, and you can generalize graph cluster states, oriented weighted graphs. In the future, it would be nice to find a general solution for qubits, so I have some particular solution, but I don't have the most general solution for that matrix which obeys these axioms. Then, what graph theoretical problems can be solved? I don't know. Can we define the graphs invariants? I don't know. So if I had some students, they can work on this, but I don't have. So far the answers are missing. Thank you.